Our next speaker is Seth Winner, who you heard yesterday also. He's this time going to speak on audio transfer and restoration techniques employed in Pearl Records, Keyboard Wizards of the Gershwin Era.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. Whereas yesterday, 2 days ago, Jerry introduced Dennis as my associate, I was essentially his associate for that presentation. I'm doing a solo today. The reason why I'm giving this paper is that I felt that the series that was initiated on the Pearl label was so important that people should hear some wonderful records that had not seen the light of day since their original issue and with a lot of unpublished material of an era that lasted barely 10 years and pretty much died when the big band era came in. This series, Keyboard Wizards of the Gershwin series, was the fountainhead of artist Wodehouse, who's the producer, who had produced two successful discs on Gershwin piano rolls, that's on Warner, Elektra, Nonesuch. And we decided, why don't we do the contemporaries who knew Gershwin, because Gershwin's recorded legacy is well documented. It has been reissued many times, as well as these piano rolls. But the people that he worked with and associated with, nothing has been done on them, with the exception of a number of discs that were done by Willie Lerner from Music Masters back in the 60s of Arden and Omen, of three LPs worth of material, rather poorly transferred. So I decided, why don't we do this? And Pearl's and England said, sure, why not? And it's really a labor of love. And I must tell you something else, that as wonderful as Tantalizing Tingles is, which I bought last year from Curt Nock in Washington, you're going to hear material in here that were on transcription discs of various artists that are not listed in here. And surprisingly, of a couple of commercial items that are not listed in here, as well as some private recordings. This is probably a series that could not have been done without the technology that we have in the digital domain that has come up within the last 2 or 3 years because of the problematic sources, namely dealing with acoustic discs that have been badly gouged out or worn out, transcriptions that are loaded with crackle and pops and grit due to mishandling over the years. And what I'd like to do is give you an example of the three that have been issued. And they're all from different mediums. The first one is of Arden and Omen with their band in 1927 for the Brunswick Record Company doing Here I Am, Broken Hearted. Dana Suisse performing her own piece, Scared Set, which is from a Schirmer set from 1940. And then Pauline Alpert doing her tribute to George Gershwin's Fascinating Rhythm from a Muzak transcription pressing dated about 1944.
Thank you.
no wonder Fred Allen said about Pauline Alpert, the amazing woman that sounded like two pianos. She was known as the whirlwind. Dana Suisse was known as the female Gershwin. What you heard were examples of what were called novelty piano that kind of started just before World War I and came to a head in 1921 when Zez Confrey came on the scene with Kitten on the Keys. These are people that are not well known, unfortunately. Arden and Oman were were known better than the other two female pianists you've heard. Now, what you've heard are the finished product that's on the CD of each one of these items. I'm going to take other selections of what I had to work against to get it to the point you heard. Utilizing Cedar's phase corrector box, the decrackler, the DC-1, their declicker, and at the time I only had Hiss-1, which didn't allow me to do certain things I can do now, but I was quite pleased with the results. I was able to get something that you heard here. Now let's go back to Arden and Oman. One of the most popular recordings was Lucky Day, which was from the George White scandals of 1926. The original recording was done by Harry Richman in the Brunswick Studios in July of 26, and Arden and Oman were in the studios with their own arrangement at exactly the same time, and their records were issued, were released on the same date, if I'm correct. What you're going to hear now is the record unprocessed, just with a turnover in it, just to give you an idea of what the overall sound picture was and the amount of crackle and schmutz and junk that was in the record. These are some of the earliest records that Brunswick put out, which they called the Light Ray. Among collector friends of mine, we call them the Death Ray, and you'll hear why. There is an inherent problem in these recordings, as Dennis and I have discussed, is the fact that when you ever have any sort of loud brass section, when it would go above a certain dynamic range, the system would just fold over. It would not get any louder, and it would start to distort. Here is what the disc sounds like unprocessed. Thank you. off a lot of problems. The biggest problem is the amount of surface noise that is in that recording and clicks and pops that is masking an awful lot of upper end detail. After processing this for about 3 hours, phase correcting it, de-clicking, then de-crackling it, then applying a certain amount of noise reduction, and then re-equalizing this thing to sound properly, this is the result you will hear. You'll hear in spots the details of banjos that are in there that are kind of masked because of the surface noise, and the sibilance on certain S, on the S words within the quartet are much more prevalent now. Of course, it's also showing all the problems that are in the recording, but at least I was able to bring some of the frequencies down that were rather glaring in the brass section. Here's what it sounds like off the CD. That's fine and dandy. As Doug Pomeroy had brought out yesterday, sometimes through overprocessing, you run into problems, as he had played in some of his examples. The next one is one that took me about 3 hours to put together. It's another one of Arden and Oman's records from 1932, a band record called Strike Me Pink with Frank Luther as vocal. This is one that has an incredible amount of brass work in it, and the copy I was using was even more badly gouged out than the one you were listening to. And I had a problem running it through the decrackler, the declicker. The Cedar declicker does not like any sort of fast brass attacks. And as a result, what I did is I had to process it two ways. I did one where I did a pass through the decrackler, which took out almost all the low-grade grit, but not the larger ticks. And then I ran it through the declicker with a decrackler so that it would eliminate all the ticks, but I had distortion in the brass passages. What I then did is load it into my Cedar editor at the time. I now have a Sadie. And I was able to intercut between the two different processes. And what I'll do is I'll play this for you now, and every time my hand goes down, it will be a digital edit that I did between either one of the processes that was either just decrackled or declicked and crackled in order to restore this disc to pristine shape.
think I'm falling in love. Strike me blue if I don't think it's you. Strike me brown if you're not down from heaven above. Strike me green if I don't mean it to. I was shy, a bit of oh my, but now I feel blue. There's no doubt you're gonna bring out the Tarzan in me. Strike me pink if I don't think I'm falling in love. Strike me blue if I don't think it's you.
Like I said, that took about 3 hours to put together. Sometimes you have to do this kind of pastiche of a cut and paste, literally measure by measure, to restore things, because the digital technology will not allow you to do it. Those kind of transients you hear on the trumpet look like ticks to the digital system, and says, I'm trying to take this out. And when you hear CDs where you hear this kind of incredible low-end distortion coming up, that's what's called number crunching. What's going in is not coming out. Back to Dana Suisse. Her only commercial records were for the Schirmer Record Company in 1940. The biscuits that were used for these records were of such a high grit that no matter what you did to them in the analog domain, you couldn't make them sound like anything. And this is another one where I've just taken a bit of the piece of her piece called Jazz Nocturne, where you'll hear it unprocessed, and then I just crossfade into what we put onto the CD. This is another one that required an incredible amount of EQing, as well as a certain amount of denoising, but not too much, in order to at least bring up the piano sound, which was obscured by all the surface noise that was under it after it was decrackled and declicked. Took an awful lot of processing. Those are relatively easy. It's when you start working with vinylite or Victrolac pressings that have not been stored properly, where grit will get on the surface and completely score grooves because of dirt getting in there and the soft material that the vinyl pressings were made with. Pauline Albert's CD was also another challenge because most of her material are from Muzak pressings that were sent out for broadcast purposes. What we're going to hear now is her own piece called Church Mouse on a Spree. This one is very interesting because, A, it has a number of thumps at the head of it, a lot of clicks and pops and crackle, and some pretty bad gouges toward the end of the piece. This is what it sounded like off the disc. Thank you. That's typical of what I had to work with. What I was able to do here is we put in a variable high pass at the head of this, and some of those thumps I was able to edit out, putting it up on the editor, listening for it, and doing a crossfade into it. This was processed through Cedar through its large, medium, then small, and then decrackle. Whatever artifacts were left, as in the end, I still had to edit out because they are just so big and so broadband. And here's what it sounds like on the CD. That's what I call a true preservation job, to get something back up to that kind of quality. The last of the examples I'm going to play, Unprocessed versus Processed, is probably my favorite record out of all of them. Victor Ardern and Phil Ohman doing their own version of the Maple Leaf Rag. It's probably the wildest version ever put on record. It was recorded for Victor, if I remember correctly, in December of 1930 after about 8 tries. They tried it back in October. Instead of using a double bass with drums, they had used a tuba, and apparently there must have been something wrong with the recording, and they went back and did it again. The copy we got came from Kurt Nauck. It was a beautiful copy, but it had a number of problems. Namely, the equalization of the recording is skewed to the piano that when a certain note is hit, it just completely goes out of proportion to the rest of the recording. There's an inordinate amount of room tone at the bottom end that kind of masks a lot of the percussion playing. And there's another problem of the disc being slightly overcut in spots. Now, it's little bits of wear and tear in the loud passages. And there was another major problem is that when they finished the recording, they shut the mechanism off too soon and it goes into a locked groove, so there really isn't a natural tail out to fix, to fade on. So what I did is a cut and paste of taking essentially the room tone from the start of the record, editing it into the end, and then fading down naturally. Here is what the record sounds like unprocessed. Thank you. I think that was Happy Reese on the drums, if I'm correct. Because of all the frequency response problems, a lot of the upper-end percussion detail is not evident. After re-EQing, decrackling it through a number of different processes on Cedar, there are different modes of it. One is called Crackle 1, which tries to take out everything in one pass. And then they have something called Crackle 2, which is, by the way, the only successful system I've come across that will take out a buzz from a line ground loop buzz from a recording without affecting it. It works on some of those strip grooves you heard. There is still one in there toward the end that is still apparent in the final master, but I have a funny feeling that was an overcut to begin with. And Cedar didn't, it wasn't very successful in taking it out, but in comparison to what the original disc sounds like, I think you're going to be quite pleased. To conclude, I'd like to play two selections that are going to be on the upcoming Volume 4 Keyboard Wizards of the Gershwin era, the one who started the novelty piano, Zez Confrey. What we're going to hear is his last commercial record, which is an arrangement of Dvorak's Humoresque called Humoristless with his band from November of 1924, and then followed by a private recording he made in 1943, which is the only from his only known electrics, done of a composition he entitled Ragdoll Carnival, which I think is probably the best thing he's ever done. And unfortunately, no one will hear it until the CD comes out. ¶¶ entire project will probably go to 7 CDs. This is something that's a realization that I don't think could have happened even with the equipment I had 2 years ago. I want to thank you all and bearing with me, and that hopefully we can get the lunch soon. If anybody has questions, please ask. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I have a couple quick things I want to say before we break.